Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Question Mark with Mark Schlereth is brought to you by Brakes Plus.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
All right, this one comes in on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, where you can give us all of your feedback. And, well, you know, a lot of optimism surrounding Case Keenum, but this texter did not put his name or her name on it, but says, Mark, can we be real about Case Keenum? He only looked good in Minnesota because of the team around him. With this offensive line, he can't do it here in Denver. Can he? Won't he crumble?
I would argue that Case Keenum has put up pretty decent numbers in a really, really bad organization in St. Louis and then obviously Los Angeles when the Rams moved. Under Jeff Fisher, who has crushed the careers of, again, here's a real interesting deal for you. So they trade for Nick Foles out of Philly to the Rams, make him the starting quarterback. He is absolutely awful for the Rams to the point where they cut him. He's going to leave football. He's so disgusted with football and is going to go into ministry. Andy Reid calls him up and says, hey, come get a year of football rehab. I know you can still play. So he goes to Andy Reid, rehabs for a year in Kansas City, signs in Philadelphia, you know, under that head coach that had played, you know, Doug Peterson, that had coached for Andy Reid, played for Andy Reid, and ends up being the quarterback, the kind of quote-unquote savior after Carson Wentz gets down, and is the Super Bowl MVP. And in that same system, Case Keenum was actually good. So, you know, for all the Case Keenum, oh, we only did it 1 year in Minnesota, and Minnesota was so much better than Denver. Are they? Yeah, they've got a legit tight end. I like their receiving core. They fixed their offensive line, but their tackles are still pretty average.
Let's start right there, then, because the question mark was about this offensive line. Tell me about the Minnesota offensive line.
Right. Well, they went out.
Was it head and shoulders better than what the Broncos have right now?
No. You've got to think. Okay, so let me just look. Oh, so, off the top of my head, I know they got the center from Ohio State, who is a really good player. I'm not looking anything up, so you can take this off. This is all off the top of my head.
Their offensive line, really quickly.
So, okay, let me go to the tackles real first.
Riley Reiff.
So if you're an elite, now Riley Reiff was
a first round pick.
Was a first round pick to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I'm saying. If you're a legit left tackle first rounder and you're really good, you don't ever leave the team that drafted you. And he was allowed to leave in free agency. Okay? So Riley Reiff is, don't get me wrong, Riley's a good player, Mike. He's not an elite left tackle. He profiles more as a right tackle, but he plays there. The other guy they got, I believe, is Remmers.
Mike Remmers, who was last seen being turned into a turnstile by Von Miller in the Super Bowl.
Right. And Remmers went over there. And so really what they did is, now the inside guys, their center is the kid from Ohio State who played really well.
Pat Elflein.
Yeah, who are the two guards?
By the way, he was a third-round pick. And the guards are Nick Easton from Harvard.
Oh, he's a Harvard man.
He's a Harvard man. And Danny Isadora.
Yeah, so.
So, fifth-round pick.
Here's
so, you're right, nothing.
They played pretty well, but I think they're pretty average. The deal is, it's very much like the first two games in Denver here last year. You run the ball, you stay consistent with your philosophical approach, and you can make up for a few warts. And that's what they did. They were second in the league as far as attempts are concerned.
Rushing attempts, correct.
That's what they did. And so I look at their talent base. Is Garrett Bowles more talented than Riley Reiff? Tenfold. There's no question. Is Valdir a better player, if healthy, than Remmers? Absolutely. Now, I think the center Elflein or whatever his name is a better player than
Matt Paradis.
Matt Paradis. Ronald Leary's better than either of the guards they have.
Yep, you're right.
And then I don't know who the right guard is going to be. So some of it, and I've been telling you guys this a lot, you can make up for a few issues along your offensive line if you are great at calling plays. If you understand, like, the one thing you can't do is be oblivious to your issues. You know, part of playing this game is, and part of life in general, Mike, is to understand your weaknesses, to work on those weaknesses, but to lean on your strengths. Like, if you're not good at something, you got to work on it. But then when push comes to shove and you're in the pressure situation, like if you're giving a presentation at work and you know that you can't pronounce a certain word.
Like, for example, John Smoltz.
Yeah.
Okay. And you say Schmoltz.
You say Schmoltz all the time. Then you don't use his name in your presentation.
Right.
You say Smoltzy.
Right.
Right? You change it. Johnny boy. Right? You stay away. Like, if you're giving a presentation and you know you mispronounce a word and you just can't say it. Like, I used to work with a host that used to say induendo. And I'd be like, dude.
What?
Induendo.
Induendo?
Yeah, he's trying
Not
to say.
Not innuendo.
Innuendo. And he said induendo. Like, in the window. And you're like, no, you got to stay away from that. So just stay away from that word. Lean on your fastball, right? Lean on what you're good at. That's what you have to be able to do. And you can make up for a multitude of sins if you call games correctly. And the Minnesota Vikings, you know, everybody's like, oh, they're so much better. No, their offense is not so much better. I like their receivers, and I like their tight end, especially in the red zone. Come on, they lost their Dalvin Cook blew his knee out early in the season. You know, the kid that was pegged to be their running back. They had Latavius Murray. They had a couple other guys that performed well. But they're not. I mean, it's not like they're head and shoulders. It's not like they're a 10 offensively and we're a 4. You know, they're a 7 and we're a 6. And if we have a couple pieces come in, we can turn that around.
Okay. I've let you go on here for a while.
Yes, you have.
Okay.
Now
I have to come at you with facts.
Mm.
So Case Keenum and Minnesota did all of this because they had a clear-cut identity. They stayed with it. They never deviated from it. And the Broncos, their biggest mistake was that Mike McCoy, after the first two games of the season, got visions of grandeur in his head about becoming a head coach somewhere, and he decided to scrap what worked the first 2 weeks of the season, which was rushing for 140 and 178 yards in the first two wins. And they lost their identity. They never got it back. And you reference as part of it the idea that Minnesota was second in the league in rushing attempts with 501. Only them and Jacksonville were the two teams in the NFL that were over 500 rushing attempts. Do you realize the Broncos had 457 rushing attempts? Now, to put that in context, that ranks in the upper half of the NFL in rushing attempts.
Right.
I mean, that's only what? That's only 44 behind what Minnesota did.
Right.
Over the course of 16 games, that's, you know, about three carries more per game the Minnesota Vikings had than the Denver Broncos had. So there is something to the idea of, hey, you know, maybe the Broncos did try to do some of these things, and they just weren't good at it.
Right. Well, I mean, that
and
is...
And so why will it be much different with Case Keenum?
Well, they did not take advantage of it because their quarterback was... They couldn't make the throws. They couldn't dial it all together. It you know, there's a difference between running the ball with efficiency and running it with an attitude and running it with intent to open something else up. And if you try to do that and you can't execute in the passing game, then you're in trouble. And, you know, part of that, the other thing is, part of it is, hey, like, you started off running the ball really well early, and then you totally got away from it? And at what point did you realize your quarterbacks are so bad and they're so beaten up and they're so injured that you just got back to running the ball and you skewed in the last four or five games, you skewed that run total? I don't know. I'm not looking at the stats. But
Broncos were eighth in the NFL in rushing attempts.
Okay, but where were they like in the last four games or five games? Did they, when they were out of it, did they skew back that way? I don't know. Like, I don't know, but it part of it is the way you call games, the efficiency you call games with, how you protect your players in short passing game, in the short passing game and stuff. I know when they were going through it, Mike, when they were going on their eight-game losing streak, they were way out of whack. And they were, you know, dominant early, and then they got way out of whack, and then I don't know if they rectified that, but
I think it's maybe encouraging that the Broncos were eighth and the Vikings were second in rush attempts,
mm-hmm.
both behind offensive lines that weren't that great. And you make the case that the right. Broncos' offensive line this year could be better than what Minnesota was.
Look at Minnesota's
yards. So
there's
something to the idea right. of the quarterback like making you, more out of it.
Right. If you look at the yards per attempt for Minnesota, they had a lot of attempts, but their yards per attempt was probably bottom half of the league.
It was, actually, at 3.9. The Broncos were actually 4.1.
Man.
But they stuck with
it. I'm really good at this. I am really good at this. I didn't even look. I don't even know how to Google things. Steel trap, ladies and gentlemen.
Your point Steel was trap. They stuck with it.
That seems like a good point.
That seems like a good
yeah,
point.
Yeah, it seems good to me. It seems like it.
Even when they weren't getting.
Seems like it's the right narrative for me.
I mean, if the idea is that you're supposed to average at least 4 yards per carry, they didn't, and yet they still had the second most rush attempts in the league.
Thank you. I can always count on you. I can always count on you to try to derail my point and then talk me right back into knowing that I'm right. It's incredible.
But it does show
mm-hmm.
how Minnesota felt, or let me ask you, does it show how Minnesota felt about Case Keenum that, hey, even if we're only averaging 3.9 yards per carry, which is among the bottom half of mm-hmm. the league, we still have to continue to run the football because
absolutely.
We don't trust our quarterback to be able to lift our offense if we're not doing that.
Well, I think one, you've got smarter coaches. Like Mike Zimmer is a smarter coach because he's done it longer, and he understands what he's dealing with. You know, Pat Shurmur understands what he's dealing with. Like, so Mike McCoy, hey, we're going to drop back Trevor and let Trevor pick people apart when he's injured and he's broken and he's this, that, and the other. Minnesota said, we know, like, that's not Case Keenum's skill set. Again, let's lean on his fastball. Let's not keep having him go out there and try to pronounce a word that he can't pronounce. Let's have him go out there and let's have him actually lean on his strengths. Case Keenum is not a guy that's going to take seven-step drops and rip it, you know, outside, you know, out routes and you know, and 22-yard comebacks. That's not where Case Keenum lives. He lives in that play action, intermediate, crossing route, great anticipation, you know, great trajectory on the ball, putting it in a place where his receivers can catch it and run it in the midfield area. That's what he does well. So they knew that to make sure that he could operate in that, we've got to keep him in there. Like, one of the biggest things that Kirk Cousins gives you is he gives you the ability in Minnesota to be a little bit more multiple. If we want to have a drop back, rip it outside the numbers,
right.
We've got a quarterback now that can do it. And I think it's the biggest, you know, everybody looks at Case Keenum and says, well, if they don't believe in him after that, well, it's not that they don't believe in him. It's like, hey, we want a quarterback that can give us a little bit more offensive versatility because we've got the players in Thielen that can get that done. And so there's a couple things that we weren't able to take advantage of. And I think that's part of it. Now, that was also a knock on Drew Brees early in his career. But Drew Brees, through his work with Tom House and his work on throwing mechanics and his work on, you know, and creating and generating velocity through legs, you know, and the way he throws the football, there's nobody that works harder on Drew Brees, or harder than Drew Brees, on throwing and mechanics and arm strength and all those things. That dude, you watch him after practice, and I've been there. They had me down to speak to the team and to do some things Sean Payton did. You watch him after, like before practice, his warm-up routine and all the things he does before practice, and then during practice, all the throws he makes, and then after practice, the arm care and the routines he works. Like, that dude is there forever. Like, and I know a lot of those things that Tom House does because my son does them. They're exhausting. They're excruciating. So I know the kind of work that he's put in to increase arm strength. Same with Tom Brady. Same with all these old quarterbacks who, like, Tom Brady throws it better now than he did when he was 24. How? Because he's worked at it.
But what we're describing here, what we're learning about when you take a closer look at what Minnesota did offensively, was they went out of their way to protect Case Keenum. By the amount of times that they ran the football and the fact that even though they weren't getting the kind of return on their running game, they still stuck with it. And what they took advantage of was the fact that he didn't turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, kudos to him for that. But I think what we're looking at here is, and preparing Bronco fans for, is the idea that this is going to have to be an offense that is patient, that commits to the run, stays with the run, even if the run isn't giving you the kind of results you want, be okay with that. Be okay with the idea that when it gets to be third and six,
right,
you'll have a quarterback who won't make a mistake at that point.
Right.
Now, maybe he won't make a big play that will all of a sudden single-handedly lift your offense that hasn't been able to run the football, but he won't make a mistake. And what'll that do? It allows you to punt the football, play field position, send your defense back out on the field, and at least play to the strength of this football team, which you didn't do with Trevor Siemian and the other quarterbacks over the last few years, because not only were you not getting the big explosive offensive plays, you were getting mistakes.
Right.
So I think what you're telling people here is, look, don't expect big, huge fireworks from this offense. But what you should expect is a drastic cut down in mistakes, allowing this team to stay in games, stay close in games, and allow their defense to go out and be what their defense has been in the past.
Right. And then if you can get...
But you think people are okay with that?
I think they will be okay when the results are wins. And I think the other thing that happens in that scenario, Mike, is when you're patient and you execute, you know what ends up happening to you defenses? They end up getting antsy. And they end up trying to make a big play. They end up taking themselves out of sound, solid defensive principles and getting themselves in a position to, hey, I'm going to make the big play here, or I've got to bring extra pressure. I've got to do this. And when you do that, you hit. You know, it's really interesting. There was several teams. You go back to the zone blocking system, 96, 97, 98, the years we had here where Terrell went, you know, went 1,400, 1,700, and 2,000 yards. And how many teams try to defend the zone system? And the Raiders always try to do it the same way. The Raiders try to do it by stunting and pinching, which will occasionally create a negative or zero run. And that's okay. You got to stick with it. Because you know what ends up happening? You get two guys, we always used to say two asses don't fit through one hole, and you get two asses in the same hole, and then all of a sudden TD goes 60 yards for a touchdown. And it's 2-1-0, 1-2-3, bam, 60, you know? And they always tried to do that by running games, pinch, pinch, loop, all that stuff. And you'd loop the wrong way, and we'd counter back the other way, you know, we'd have it called the right, and you are just absolutely destroyed, and you've taken yourself out of defending the run by trying to make a big play or two. And the bottom line is, when you're efficient and you run an offense that way and you know what you're doing, those big plays eventually will happen for you just through being efficient and being committed to your identity. I love making fun of the Raiders.
I know you do.
Raiders!
And we all appreciate you for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I just think that the way that the Broncos approached and reacted to and I guess sold us on the idea of Case Keenum, I expect more. I mean, you're painting a picture for an offense that is very boring,
right?
Very close to the vest, very much skewing towards risk aversion.
Yeah, risk management
versus, you know, let's go for the gusto. Let's go make a play.
Okay, all right. I'm going to explain this to you in a way that you're really going to understand this. Okay. Let's say that you hire me as your stylist.
Okay? Okay.
And you've got this big gala, just this huge event, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is gigantic. And this event.
And you're talking about me
hiring
you.
No.
Just that.
You are hiring me as your personal stylist.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So you've got this big gala, you're hosting it, and it's like one of the most important career builders that you've ever been a part of. There are going to be decision makers here. And let's say that there's going to be this big national radio syndicate that's thinking about making you, you know, giving you your own the Colin Cowherd.
Right.
Like, it's just a big career
big
move
deal.
For
okay.
you, right? And you want to be, I mean, you want to legit, you want to be big time at this gala, right?
Yes.
So you hire me as your stylist.
Okay.
I want to accentuate your strengths,
right?
So I'm going to put you in a beautiful tux, you know, with a colorful bow tie, like maybe a purple bow tie that has, you know, made some paisley type of, and then this
eye pop in purple,
black tux. You've got the beautiful white shirt with the purple buttons. You know that we got the ones and then we've got a pocket square that is just screaming like this is beautiful, and it ties right in with the purple. And then you know we've got the black shoes. We're not going patent leather, but we're going really nice.
All right, so far I'm hearing ZZ Top sharp dressed man here. Okay,
right.
So what are we doing?
You're looking great, okay? So that's what I want to accentuate that part of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dress, you look sharp. Everything is smooth because I know you're going to speak well.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to, like, all of a sudden do your hair up with gel and bring attention away from the suit and go, hey, look, I'm balding, you know?
I'm not balding.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, I saw, I'll give you for instance. Last night, you watched the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
Did you see Santana do the...
Oof.
Do the... Like, did
What's
you see...
What's with the skullet, man?
Right. Did you see the like, four strands of hair that he tried to put on top of his head? No.
But then he's got, like, the...
Right. No.
The thing going in the back.
Right.
There.
No.
No, you can't do
like,
that.
No. Because all you can look at is what is on top of your head,
Correct.
Dude.
Correct.
Right? So I wouldn't accentuate the wispy hair. I'd leave the wispy hair alone. Let it wisp.
All right.
I'm not going to spike it up and everybody goes, whoa, look at the size of that dude's head.
We're going to draw away from. So what's
right,
your
we're drawing away from the head.
And the point is?
The point is I'm not going to ask Case Keenum to drop back seven steps and rip it outside the numbers. Like, I'm going to lean on what he does well. That's the point.
My concern, though, okay, wonderful, wonderful setup there.
Right.
But it still comes down to he still has to be able to go out and do something on his own.
Right.
It can't all be dependent on everything around him. He's got to have something that he can bring to the table that he does on his own.
He's incredibly accurate. And he has, he's got great anticipation. He's great, accurate, and he's one of the best. Last year, he was one of the best I've seen at throwing his people open and
now,
letting them.
Now you're talking. Now you're giving me something.
Just like you. You're like, again, You're great at what you do. Focus on the bow tie, not on the top of the head. Bow tie, Mike.
It's all
learn
about
it, live it, love it.
All about the bow tie. Stay away from the wispiness.
No wispy.
No wispy.
Right. Pay no attention to the lack of production on top. Look at my purple bow tie.
Good point about Santana, though. What? Yeah. What's the deal there? Somebody's got to get in his ear and say, yo, dude.
There's only four strands ahead of you combing over there. Stop it.
Speaking of which, the funniest moment of the weekend, bar none in the world of sports. We'll tell you what it was next. Funniest moment of the weekend in sports. I have a clear runaway winner.
Okay.
I don't know if you have one, but here's mine. When J.R. Smith attempted a free throw yesterday early on in the game,
yeah,
and the Warriors fans started chanting MVP.
Right.
That was beautiful. I just, good old belly laugh on that one.
You know what's, it was great, but like if you're J.R. Smith, and I understand that, you know, it, like, there's not a lot processing quickly, I don't think.
Synapses aren't firing as fast as you'd like?
It's a little bit, there's a delay. Why would you deny not knowing the score and then saying, I thought they were going to call timeout? Like, you have the ability to get a rebound and call timeout. It's not on them. Like, why would you just not say, man, total brain fart, my fault, because you showed it by your body language. You basically told LeBron, I thought we were ahead, and then you went on the bench and sulked. Like, why would you compound the issue? Why would you just not come out and just say, hey, dude, my bad, I screwed that up?
I'm not a smart man.
And then he tried to rally by saying, look, I'm glad it happened to me, because I'm one of the few people that could handle this.
Yeah. Yeah, you handled it all right. You were awesome last night. If only they had a big square thing, you know, that had the score on it so that you could look at it as a player, you know, and you could see that there was like, oh, there's the score. If they had one of those, if they only had those at same, like, that should be something the NBA should look into. They should actually put the scoreboards at the stadium, not just on TV.
And I love how the people that cover the NBA, market, promote, whatever, sometimes it's one and the same, how they try to say that, oh, you know, Cleveland's going to bounce back from this. Cleveland's going to come out even more hungry. You know, there is something to the idea that sometimes you suffer such a debilitating gut punch loss that there is a hangover.
Yeah.
There is a hangover. Sometimes you just cannot avoid the fact that if you get walked off, or, you know, you give up that that goal with 2 seconds left in regulation that costs you a win, and you end up losing, and you take it into overtime, and you're flat, and you lose. There is a hangover. And, boy, did Cleveland look like a team that was carrying a hangover around from game one. They know it. They know it.
Right.
You know it. I tried to tell everybody on Friday, and it was like, no, it's only one game, that they blew their one chance of winning that series by what happened in game one.
You know,
LeBron, and isn't it clear,
like,
now?
LeBron was 29-9-12 or something like that. Right? You know, I mean, he was just a couple rebounds. It was either a couple of rebounds or a couple assists away from a triple-double. And like, he didn't have a good game. Like, his standard is so high. But it felt to me like watching him that he knows, you know, I'm surrounded by clowns. Like, didn't you feel... I just felt like it was deflated. Like, when the third quarter ended, and was it the third quarter that ended and they were only down by six, or the second quarter? I was like, I cannot. Like, how is this game even close? Because it just doesn't seem that way. And then Steph Curry just exploded with ridiculous three-pointers from, like, he made some three-pointers that were, like, are you're kidding me with that shot, right? Just unbelievable.
So
wait a minute,
you just said something. Is this what we're going to be doing now as this season, as the rest of this series plays out, and it ends inevitably with a Golden State win? Is this going to be how we try to cover for LeBron James, that he can lose this series, perhaps lose it in five games, and yet his stock
his all-time great, perhaps greatest of all-time stock will still stay high.
Oh,
because
it may increase.
Well, because, oh, well, look what he had to drag around. Yeah. He still got to the NBA Finals. He still got to the NBA Finals, and if you lose the NBA Finals, it's a loss.
I understand
that. As you always like to say, this isn't a try-hard league. It's a do-good league. You are measured by your wins and losses.
Right.
So you cannot lose the NBA Finals that you have gotten to with this team, no matter how flawed it may be. You can't get to the NBA Finals, lose it, perhaps lose it in five games in a blowout, and still have be able to have you or people around you say you've surpassed Michael Jordan. No, you can't.
Right.
No, you can't.
You can solidify how great you are. Did Tom Brady have one of the greatest Super Bowls ever in a loss last year, throwing for over 500 yards, set the all-time Super Bowl record? Kurt Warner, is he known for having great Super Bowl, you know, appearances, even though he lost two of three? Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is you can elevate, even in a loss, you can elevate your standard. Isn't there an NBA MVP, Finals MVP, that was on a losing team? I believe there was one guy.
Yeah, I think it was Jerry West, actually, long time ago.
In the all-time playoff leading scorer. So you can elevate your status, especially when, you know, you look at 51 points in game one and the gaffe that JR made. And I mean, I don't know how they're going to bounce back. I don't know how they'll respond in Cleveland. If they get a win in Cleveland, I think it'll be more that the Warriors go on cruise control for a game.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen.
Right.
Cleveland will win game three, probably, and then Golden State will win game four and close out in game five.
Right. So, anyhow, I mean, that's inevitable. That's bound to happen. It's part of the script.
Which means now the only real compelling question left to answer out of these NBA Finals is, where does LeBron go next?
Right.
Because we know one thing. When the going gets tough, LeBron gets going.
That's right.
Time to go somewhere else. Don't want to have to work this hard to make it work in Cleveland.
Right.
I'm going to go somewhere where it's already tailor-made for me to win.
Where is that? Philly?
That'll be Philly or Houston or, you know, somewhere like that.
But the Lakers, no?
No, he's not going to. Look, he doesn't want to go somewhere where
he's got a home in Los Angeles.
Where it involves building. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This guy wants to go somewhere where it's tailor-made, ready to win. Which, you know, sorry, I think that chips away at his legacy.
Yeah.
If he feels he has to keep moving around to places in order to win, I'm sorry, that at some point starts to get held against you.
What's up with the shorts?
The suit. Have you seen that?
Yeah, what's up with that? Is that a good look? The other thing is, if you don't have the shorts, they have the pants that are way high, like high waters, so you can see the shoe-sock combo.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that, look, anybody who doesn't like that look, it's just jealousy. Because he can pull it off. He can literally pull off shorts and a suit, because he's built the way he is. If I tried that, I look like the guy in AC/DC.
Oh, Angus Young?
I look like Angus Young if I tried that. With him, it works. You know?
Right.
If I try it, I might as well put like the little Angus Young cap on my head,
God,
too.
Please, no!
Yeah.
It's not going to work. It's not going to fit.
Angus, the difference, though, is Angus Young doesn't have cankles.
I don't know. Maybe he does.
No, Angus Young has skinny little legs. Yeah, you would have a little cankly. A
little cankly, really?
You'd be a little cankly. Like, that guy's ankles hanging over his shoes?
All right. It's not that bad. God, you go put up 225 pounds 26 times.
Those are sexy cankles.
All of a sudden, you get to make fun of other people.
No, that didn't happen all of a sudden. I've always made fun of other people. If you can't laugh at yourself, you can always laugh at your partner.
Good
That's
point.
What I say.
Good point. Okay, there you go. My goodness. So the Rockies are 11-16 at home. We keep saying it's going to turn around, but after this weekend, are you starting to wonder? That's next. You know, Mark, early on, when the Rockies were struggling at home, it was kind of like, yeah, well, you know, the weather's been really crappy.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been playing all these road games, so they really haven't had time to settle in and have a good long homestand. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
They'll turn it around. Well, after a less than satisfying 4-5 homestand that finishes off with a 3-game sweep at the hands of the dreaded Dodgers that knocks you out of first place and now has you 11-16 at home, I think it's a fair question to ask. Is this thing going to turn around at home?
No, it is. It's a fair question. And, you know, as of right now, you would look at them and say, they've got to put it all together. Like, they've got to put it together here in all phases. And that is something they just haven't been able to do. And that to me is kind of the scary thing. You know, they have not been able to put their hitting, their pitching, whether it's starting pitching. It's always something, you know, starting pitching, not getting enough innings early, and then starting pitching looked really good, and then the bullpen, the back end was great, and now, you know, with the injury to Ottavino, you know, they get Ottavino back, and Wade Davis is a legitimate, like, I know yesterday, notwithstanding, he's legit, but... Like, I worry about 6-7, you know, 6-7. Like, you look at the way the Rockies are just getting shelled in 6-7. That's concerning. So, can they put it all together? You asked me Friday. They were in first place by, a half a game or something on Friday. And you asked me, do you think this is sustainable? Do you think they win this division? And what was my answer to you? No. I don't. And, you know, I mean, you look at it right now. Arizona 31-27. They're a game and a half above Colorado. Colorado 30-29. San Francisco 2.5 games back from first place, but they're 29-30. So is Los Angeles. San Francisco's 1-4 straight. Los Angeles 1-3 straight. And you know what? The Padres are sitting at 27-34. They're only 5.5 games behind first place. I mean, this division is just packed right up there at the top. I just keep looking at San Francisco. I keep looking at the Dodgers. Is they're going to figure it out? They're going to get, you know, they're going to get their groove together.
But you knew the Dodgers would eventually figure it out. But what's annoying is
they figured it out against the Rockies.
Exactly,
it looked like.
Yeah. That you gave them the in.
Right. You gave them the. You were like
you gave them the wake up call.
Right.
Here you go, Dodgers. Yeah. You've been sleepwalking through the first couple of months of the season.
Uh-huh.
Here you go. Ring-a-ding-a-lingy.
Yeah. Welcome to Coors Field. You're going to average 11 points or 11 runs per game.
Right.
Not good.
That's what's galling about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew the Dodgers would eventually figure it out, but let the Reds give them their wake-up call, you know?
Right.
Not the Rockies at Coors Field.
Yeah, not good. Not good.
So now they go out on the road for 3 games at Cincinnati. And we had a conversation with Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Bronco and Rocky insider. And he said, hey, you're probably at a point right now. Look, you paid all these guys this money. You paid Brian Shaw. You paid Wade Davis.
Uh-huh.
You paid Jake McGee. I mean, we celebrated these moves during the offseason. But right now they're not working. You paid Mike Dunn last year.
Right.
The thing he says right now is you got to keep using these guys, but maybe you switch up their roles. Now, all of a sudden, the guy that gets the chance to normally work the eighth inning, sorry, you've been relegated to the sixth. You find one guy that maybe is getting it done, and that now maybe he becomes
right.
The eighth inning guy. You just shift roles around hoping to find a spark.
Right.
Why you know, you do it with, but see, here's the thing, and this is the challenge to Bud Black, is Bud too traditional? Is he too much of your classic baseball manager that's like, well, it's 162 games, can't make too much out of, you know, 1 3-game series. He mm-hmm. called this 3-game series a snippet of 162
yeah.
games. I'm sorry, I think it's more than that. But, you know, you're constantly dealing with these players' egos like they're made of, you know, they're eggshells. They're so fragile. You can't be firm with them. You can't be tough with them. You can't be demanding of them because, they might go into a shell and we'll never get them back again. Well, I don't know, at some point, can you just continue to sit back and wait?
I think Bud does a really good job, and I think he has, you know, gotten up in the grill of plenty of guys, and I think he has those pitcher on pitcher conversations, and you know, I think he's had some of those. That to me was, you know, John Gray admitted the other day that it's kind of in his head. I think that to me was like, you're minoring in psychology and you're trying to get your guys to believe in themselves because all of a sudden you believe in them. Like, hey, it's just a snippet. You know, deep down inside, I'm sure that he's in panic mode right now because he can't turn to anybody in the six that he feels comfortable. Like, there is no, like, you get to the sixth inning, man, and you got a wedgie. Like, there's no comfort there. Like, it is like a birthday. It keeps creeping up on you. And you get to the sixth, and that thing is firmly entrenched. Deep, deep between the biscuits, you know? And there is no comfort in that at all. And that's the sixth and seventh, and now the eighth because no Ottavino. Like, that's an uncomfortable three innings that you got to stand around.
Are wedgies still a thing? Do wedgies still happen?
Absolutely.
Oh, like you mean in school?
School, do wedgies still? I mean, I can still, I can close my eyes right now and literally transport back like 30
right.
years and recall some epic
right.
wedgies that were delivered in the hallways.
I don't think they're
full, like.
Right. Carrying a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there is.
Do they still do those?
I don't think so because it's kind of everybody is, you know, anti-bullying, which is good. Anti-bullying is good.
I agree.
Yeah. Anti-bullying is good. The other thing is I think the advent of colored underpants has kind of taken away the fun of the wedgie.
Good point.
Right.
Great point.
Like the tidy whiteys, that's kind of fun. And because one, you got the big white underpants pulled up, you know, midway into the back. Two, you know, there's going to be, let's just call it some residue.
Oh, geez. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Oh.
I wasn't even thinking about that.
Right.
I don't even recall seeing anybody with a wedgie with that. Why do you automatically go there?
Honey, did you get another wedgie? I'm just doing the laundry. Are the kids in school bothering you?
Yeah. Like, that's part of the deal.
I don't know. I just, quick tangent there. You brought up a wedgie and.
No.
I mean, Bud comes from an era where he probably remembers the wedgies.
Sure.
I just don't know if anybody do wedgie. I'm just asking an honest question. Do wedgies still exist out there? I guess we'll throw it out to our text line. I mean,
get wedgies?
Do kids? I'm just asking.
Probably not. It's probably not. Probably not a thing anymore.
I mean, while I love your description. That the seventh inning rolls around, or the sixth inning rolled around, and all of a sudden Bud's got a wedgie type feeling.
Right.
I think you just need to elaborate to this
audience.
Maybe a newer audience about exactly the.
Oh my gosh.
The power of the wedgie.
When you got a good wedgie back in the day, you're lifting a kid up off his feet. Right? That's good, clean fun. Can't do it anymore.
Can't do that anymore.
No. Can't have fun.
Can't.
At somebody else's expense anymore. What are we coming to?
You strike me as somebody who's probably a classic wedgie giver. Huh? Probably give a few back in the day?
Time or two.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I bet. Okay. Hey, out at OTH today. I'll be out there. So we'll have plenty to react to tomorrow as the Broncos kick off 4 days. This is the one we'll get a chance to watch, so... What would anything you'd like me to look for? Anything specifically that curious about?
Yeah, one of the big things that we've talked about, kind of an intangible, and the Broncos have addressed it several times, about the leadership of Case Keenum. So I just like to see how the whole huddle, how the whole offense just operates. Like, can you compare and contrast it to last year when you went there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is that difference? Do you see anything that you can take from that's actually tangible, that you can kind of hold on to?
Okay. All right. We will do that.
Assignment.
Assignment. I love assignments. Good. I'll have one for you for Clear of the Air tomorrow at 7, because I know you won't have anything prepared for Clear of the Air. We're ready to prepare to turn things over to Pritch and Cecil coming your way next.
Wind blew down, humming, singing, humming down.